Welcome to Supporting the Spectrum, the Thompson Center's podcast series on all things autism. We aim to bring you the most up-to-date information on autism research, services, and supports. I'm Gina Randolph, faculty in the Special Education Department at the University of Missouri and part of the Training and Education Division at the Thompson Center. With me today to talk about augmentative and alternative communication is Michelle Damp, speech-language therapist here at the Thompson Center, and Megan Hensel, occupational therapist at MU Children's Hospital Outpatient Therapy Center. Thank you both for being with me today.
Thanks, Gina.
Michelle, can you start us off by explaining what augmentative and alternative communication means?
Yes. So augmentative and alternative communication is often referred to as AAC. Augmentative just means to supplement. So we're supplementing communication for children who may not be able to communicate verbally or effectively communicate verbally. Alternative just means instead of. So instead of that verbal language, we're looking at other options to try to help support their language.
Megan, if you can please explain a little bit also about just the different types of AAC.
Sure. So we categorize it with a no tech, which would be like no technology, low technology, and high technology. So no technology would be using your body to communicate, like pointing, gesturing, using your facial expressions, sign language. Low technology would be something that doesn't require a battery, so that could be writing, using pictures. A lot of people are familiar with PECS, the picture exchange communication system. And high tech would be actually a speech generating device, such as a tablet or actual technology that requires a battery and plug-in, those kind of things.
So hearing those range of options, this clearly kind of meets a really diverse range of needs. Can you talk a little bit about who can benefit from AAC?
So really anyone can benefit from AAC. There's not really a predetermined age level because, you know, anyone can be communicating and it doesn't matter the diagnosis, it doesn't matter what the kid presents with. We can kind of work with that family and that child to come up with the most effective way for them to communicate.
AAC can benefit anyone who has complex communication needs, and this can include children who have been diagnosed with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, including childhood apraxia of speech. Sometimes we don't always think about AAC for those children who have apraxia of speech, but that can also help that child to decrease their frustration with language while they're working on building up their speech skills as well.
So no predetermined age. Is there a set of skills that need to be present before AAC is explored?
No, definitely no set of skills required. When we do the evaluation, we're going to look at the skills the child already has and then go from there to determine what comes next or what we need to work on.
One of the greatest concerns that I hear from families who are caring for a child who has maybe limited communication or hasn't developed spoken language yet is the worry that turning to AAC is somehow giving up on verbal speech developing or going to take away from that development if we're giving a different modality for communication. Can you just share a little bit about that?
Yes. So with using an AAC, any type of AAC, that actually helps to facilitate the verbal language. That's what the studies have shown. It will not hurt or delay any developing verbal speech. So sometimes when we start out using AAC with a child, we actually transition over to verbal language after that child sees the benefit in that communication, and then they can also start to learn more with their verbal language, and that becomes a more effective way of communicating for them. So sometimes it's a stepping stone to that verbal language. Sometimes we move from that low-tech option like PECS on up into a higher-tech version with a speech-generating device.
So I'm going to rule that under myth.
Yes.
You know, it's a myth that AAC will take away from or limit that communication. Definitely beneficial for kids who have delays to explore that as an option. I do want to go back to what you just said. You mentioned PECS. And so just for our listeners who aren't familiar with that, that is the picture exchange communication system. And how that looks is through different steps and procedures. The child is taught to use a picture to communicate their wants and needs.
Yes, absolutely.
So Megan, this next question is for you. Since you do AAC evaluations, how do you determine the most appropriate AAC or device for a child to use since individuals are so varied? What's that process look like?
That's a great question. So we typically schedule a two-hour evaluation for the first time that the child is seen, and that's with a speech-language pathologist and an occupational therapist. The occupational therapist is really looking at access to communication, whether they can isolate index fingers to target buttons on a device. Do they need switches? Is gross motor, fine motor hard? Do they need to use eye gaze? Different things like that. And then the speech-language pathologist is really looking at that language component. And from that first initial visit, we look at all their skill sets. We collect information from parents. And sometimes during that first initial visit, we notice a kid will take to a particular communication style or device, and we can recommend it right there. But a lot of times we ask the families to come back for what we call a series, which might be one time a week for 6 to 8 weeks, just to continue trialing things and figure out the best fit. Really, insurance will only cover one device typically for 5 to 10 years, and these can be pretty expensive. So we want to make sure that we are making the best choice for the family and for the child. A lot of times we can get a trial device, which would entail the company sending a device to the family. They can take it to school, they can take it home with them, they can take it out into the community. And then if we really like it, we can ask the insurance company to purchase it for the family. And if insurance won't approve the device, we can always look at alternative funding, such as the regional center, or there's grants out there that will support AAC.
So once the evaluation process has been completed and a child gets connected with a specific device to meet their needs, what's next? What are those best practice strategies for device use?
So really, the team is going to work with the parent, the teacher, other therapists that the child might be seeing, just to make sure that everyone is on the same page. Our center can provide training for the parents and the teachers to increase their knowledge on how to use the device. And a lot of times the company that we're getting the device from has vendors that can travel and train those people also. This is just going to take a lot of time. Patience is key. The child is going to need a lot of repetition using the device to make sure that they start understanding how to use it and to become efficient with it. And we want to continue that training process just to ensure that down the line they don't abandon this device and it doesn't get put in a closet, never to be found again.
And with AAC devices, if you kind of think about it as 20% hardware, 80% follow-up, so 20% of your job is finished once you receive your device. 80% of the job starts after the device has been received. So there are some best practices as far as using the device with your child. So access is number one. They need to have access to their device all day in all environments. Even time to play on their device, look through it, play with the different buttons, understand what it does. Modeling is something also that's extremely important to get successful use with an AAC system. You will model for your child how to use it. Modeling is done by parents, therapists, teachers, so everyone needs to be very familiar with the device. We're talking about as if it's a device. This also includes the low-tech and the mid-tech options that aren't devices but might be pictures or another communication system or switches. Another area is core vocabulary. So there's a set of vocabulary that includes about 80% of what we say during our day. We want to make sure that the child is familiar with the core vocabulary so that they have effective communication while using their device. And then finally, just lots of communication opportunities. It may take over 200 opportunities for this child each day to, you know, learn how to use their device effectively, get all that modeling in, having access to it. When all of those things are put into place, which sounds a little overwhelming, then that's whenever we really see that success with using the device for the child.
I'm glad that Michelle differentiated between just the device and other types of AAC, because I wanted to mention that during the evaluation process, it's okay if your child's not ready for a speech generating device. The team will discuss different options, and you know, they might recommend working on picture cards or using voice output switches and provide like a home program to the family and the school, and then recommend come back in 6 months to a year and we'll reevaluate to see if your child is ready. And that's okay. It's based on, you know, each kid is developing differently and they might have different interests and motivation to communicate, and that's totally fine.
It sounds like one of the most important factors is to make sure that everyone is on the same page, that everyone is utilizing and working on communication, because communication doesn't just happen in one environment. And so if we're teaching the skill, we really want the child to have the opportunity to use that technology across environments.
What do you do if other people either don't see the importance of having the device available, say, not just in the speech language therapy sessions, but also in the classroom and also at home? How do you work on getting everyone on the same page?
So I think the most important thing is just to be understanding that it is tricky. You are learning a new system, whether you're using a picture exchange system or whether you're using a device. It's new for everyone, and so it can be challenging. So just understanding that and empathizing with everyone who's learning this device, that it's okay, you know, to take your time with it. But we also need to look at that device as this child's communication and as their voice. So we are not without our voices. We have them with us all the time, everywhere, in every environment. We need to make sure that the device is charged, ready to use in every environment that this child is in, and with every person that this child has communication with during their day. If they're in the classroom, that device should be on their desk, and they should have access to it so that they can communicate, they can answer questions during circle time and during other points of their day. During their specials class, they need to have it accessible. We do use it a lot during our speech and language therapy sessions, but the most important part is getting that generalization so that the child's using it at home, able to request their favorite TV shows, their favorite foods, also able to comment and answer questions and participate in discussions during family dinners, and then also out in the community, helping them to order at McDonald's exactly what they're wanting from McDonald's, and, you know, doing all of that fun stuff out in the community with their device as well.
I do want to mention here to our listeners, we have a series of 5 training videos that you can access on demand through our website that are on the use of AAC. And some of those things, Michelle, that you're explaining and talking about are really gone into in detail of how to just be mindful about how do you embed communication opportunities and the use of this through your everyday routines and structures that are already in place. And so for anyone who is exploring this, who are supporting children who are using AAC, I highly encourage you to go to our website and check out that series as a starting point. So while I have the two of you here, I would love to take the opportunity to just have you problem solve through one of the most common challenges I hear about device use. What do you do if the child is just seems to be playing on the device or is repeatedly like pushing the same button over and over again? How do you move past this so that it doesn't get kind of seen as a, oh, this isn't working, and then that's the end?
So let them. That's going to be my number one answer, and very easy. Allow them to play with their device. Allow them to stim on their device, but also start to set some parameters when that's appropriate and when it's not appropriate. So you can use some visual supports to help the children understand that. Think about babies babbling. They're not necessarily giving you a lot of meaningful communication at the beginning. They're playing with their speech, they're playing with their language, and allow that to happen. If it happens all the time and you're not getting any functional communication or you're not able to model, that's whenever you can start putting some structure in place, using some visuals, some first then, a timer, or you can try setting a delay on the device. You can try some of those options. Megan, do you have any other ideas on that?
I think a good way to think about it, you know, not taking away the device, because you wouldn't be able to take away a child's voice. So if a kid is constantly telling you, cookie, 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 you couldn't just take a voice away from a child with verbal communication. So you shouldn't do that to our children who are using AAC. But I think all those strategies are excellent. And the delays on the devices can be super helpful. So that would just mean you would have to hold the button down for a little bit longer, or sometimes you could put a delay between buttons so I can't press too many buttons too quickly. So that can slow our kids down and make them a little bit more purposeful in their choices.
And something else that I just thought about whenever you were saying that is, it's okay to tell our children who are using AAC, it's okay to say no. Even though they're requesting that cookie, it's okay to say, you know, I hear you, I know you want that cookie, but you'll have to wait until after you get finished doing your chores or whatever it is that you're wanting them to do first.
All great advice. And hearing you guys talk today, it really highlights the importance of going to experts to have an evaluation done, to get set on the right path, and to have that support moving forward. So for caregivers living in Missouri, where can they go? Where do they initiate an AAC evaluation?
Great question. So the first step is the child needs a script from their physician, typically like primary care provider or pediatrician. And I think a lot of families believe that they get this script and they come to the evaluation and they think they're going to get a device right there that day. And I wish that were the case, but it is a process and it's going to be typically a couple months before they actually get a device. But there's multiple places in Missouri that they can go. Children's Therapy Center here in Columbia does do evaluations. I know St. Louis has an option, Kansas City, I believe Springfield might even do one. So depending on wait lists at these places or the drive for family, they can kind of pick and choose where they want to go.
One thing that I would add to that is just make sure that when you go for that evaluation that that center or those professionals have experience with evaluating for AAC, and also a team approach is going to be best. So if you can get a speech-language pathologist and an occupational therapist working together to make sure that the communication needs are getting met as well as the access needs.
So for parent referrals, a parent needs to get a physician referral in order to get the evaluation. What about children who are being served in schools where maybe the caregiver isn't the first entry point to want to explore this, but schools are wanting to explore and schools are saying, hey, we think that this child can benefit from AAC?
So when that happens through the school district, best practice would be to refer for an outside evaluation with a speech-language pathologist and occupational therapist who have experience with the evaluation for AAC. If the school district has a speech-language pathologist and occupational therapist and they have that luxury that they have that experience, then it would be beneficial and viable and a good idea to go through the school district to get that evaluation. The question comes up, if a child gets that evaluation through the school district and they recommend a certain type of device for this child, then does the school district pay for that device? Then does that child get to take that device home and use it across community settings? Those are questions that would definitely be very important to ask and, you know, get some straight answers to before moving forward with that evaluation through the school district.
And I don't know if this is well known, but there's a great resource right here in Missouri. It's called Missouri Assistive Technology. And a lot of times they will provide up to $5,000 worth of assistive technology equipment for a student that I think the school has to purchase, but then MOAT will reimburse.
Thank you both for that wealth of information. I always like to end by giving our listeners some recommended resources. So if you have caregivers or school personnel who are interested in learning more about AAC or accessing services, what resources do you recommend?
So jumping back to Missouri Assistive Technology, they're just a great resource. They offer a loan program, which is where families, a school district, or a therapy center could actually borrow AAC and let a child trial it out to make sure it's appropriate before they go ahead and try to get it funded. And this isn't just limited to speech generating devices. This also includes access to computers, assistance to help with writing. This could be voice output switches. They have just a variety of things. And you can even look at their options if you go onto their website. They have it all listed out right there.
So in addition to that, one thing I wanted to add too, the Missouri Assistive Technology Center, they also have equipment for children who have hearing impairments. So you can try out different DM systems and FM systems. So it's a really great resource. Their website is that www.at.mo.gov, and then you can find all of that great information there. Another website that I give to a lot of parents, therapists, educators is the Practical AAC website. And Practical has two A's in it, so PRAACTICALAAC. So if you search for that website, they have a lot of good lessons. They give you core vocabulary. And they also have an email listserv where they send out emails every week to give you updates on different lessons that you can do to make sure that you're helping with that generalization and use of the device, that 80% that needs to occur across all environments for our kiddos.
Michelle, Megan, thank you so much for sharing all of that knowledge with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
We would also like to invite you to join us for the Thompson Foundation's 2021 Amaze Virtual Gala and Auction.
This will be held on November 4th at 7 p.m. The travel raffle is already open, and the virtual auction will open on October 25th. Our goal is to raise over $300,000 to support critical education, clinical services, and research at the Thompson Center. Register now at amaze.givesmart.com.